No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Connor Orr, or if you read the comments on Twitter or X, someone just said I'm Connor Dork. So there you go. That was a new one. But we have a big show today. Mitch Goldich, writer, editor, podcaster, foodie, runner. I'm trying to list all of you. You know, it's not, you are not these things, but these things help make up you. And I'm glad that you're here today.
Thank you, Connor. Always good to be here. Sorry about Connor Dork. That's a tough one. You got to think you've heard most.
That's a like, new one.
No, most plays on your name that make fun of you. I would have thought at some point during your childhood you would have heard them all. But that's good. They can always keep coming up with new ones.
And it's you know what, the beauty's in the simplicity, right? And that person probably was like, you know, he's heard this one before, but let me just give it a go anyway. And you know, there's no protection on X, Mitch. You know, this is the Wild West we're trying to live through here.
Yep. And it'll keep getting worse. So we have that to look forward to for at least a little while.
Mitch is here for a big reason. Training camps are underway and I will be on the road. I will potentially be on the road with Mitch. We'll talk about that at some point. Albert Breer is on the road. The whole MMQB team is on the road. I'm actually off to Giants tomorrow. I'm going to see the Patriots next week. We've had a summer full of meetings. We got a lot of stuff to talk about, but we didn't want to let the summer pass by without highlighting one of my favorite parts of the NFL offseason, which is Sports Illustrated MMQB Bad Takes Week. Mitch is sort of the proprietor of Bad Takes Week. He writes a bad take. He edits all the bad takes, and we're here to break them all down.
I'm excited about it. You say, I think you sort of teed it up as like an annual part of the summer. Part of what's fun about this is it's not annual. We did it once in 2019. And then after a 4-year break, I think I wrote an intro post to the week in addition to my actual standalone bad take. And I think I called it our quadrennial for now tradition. And it was fun. I think it just kind of came up in a staff meeting that we had, that we had done it before, and someone was like, let's do it again. And I was like, sure. And so I ended up being the, not just the editor, but sort of the bad takes committee, because sometimes people try to use Bad Takes Week as a way to launder good takes into the rotation. And Albert is like chief among the people here who tries to pull a fast one and thinks he's really slick, where he's like, mine's a good take. I think everybody believes on some level that theirs is a good take, but I have to make sure that the takes are actually bad. And funny enough, sorry, I'm rambling on here, but I wasn't even going to bring this up, but you started talking about people making fun of you on social media. I posted this on one of the many new social media platforms. I believe it was Blue Sky, which you're not even on, Connor.
No.
And I posted it, and someone replied, no surprise, Connor Orr is all over this, which I actually chuckled at, and I had forgotten about it because I just ignored him, and I wasn't going to tell you, and then when you brought up Connor Dork, I had to just tell you that was my personal favorite insult over Bad Takes Week on the internet, and it was at you.
I know that most of my takes, I mean, everything I write, I believe, but it's funny that like I didn't know there were people out there that were just like, oh God, there's a Connor Orr take. For the most part, I don't think I'm super contrarian. I think I'm, you know, I try to be a voice of the people, but I guess there is a subsect of the take consuming population that just thinks I'm out there.
I think you are good as a voice of the people. I do think you have a contrarian streak. I think I could bring up some old takes of yours that did not run during Bad Takes Week. But I think that's part of what people like about you. And that dates back to the Are You Kidding Me days in your former career home. And you and I, we've talked many times about power rankings and what happens when you have a blind voting system, everyone voting anonymously in a poll, and how one person can wreak havoc on the entire thing, and how I believe that's irresponsible when they don't actually have to put their name on it. I wouldn't walk around, I wouldn't call you Mr. Consensus. You definitely have a contrarian streak.
Okay. I'm gonna embrace that. I don't know how you want to kick this thing off. I mean, I would like you for, by the way, Mitch, the one thing that I forgot to mention in the introduction, Mitch is the inventor and also the proprietor of the Octopus. He invented a statistic that is now utilized by like Caesars and all the main sports books during the Super Bowl. The Octopus is if someone scores a touchdown and then the 2-point conversion, and Mitch just launched his Octopus of the Year award winner, who is Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts talked to you about the Octopus of the Year, which is thrilling, and I would urge everyone on SI.com to check that out after you listen to this, of course.
Yep. Thanks for the plug there. Yeah, it's funny. So this is the fifth year in a row I have written about the Octopus in the off season, and I think the columns just get increasingly self-indulgent every year. And so it's me. And this year, I will say, I explained to Jalen Hurts' people, I was like, I'm going to talk to Jalen Hurts for the story, but a lot of it's going to be about me. And, you know, I showed them what I did last year when I talked to Mark Andrews. And so I know they were warned. But yeah, it was fun. And it's sort of like an interview with the player who I give the award to, and then sort of a look back at the year in Octopus. But it is funny to think about like all the requests Jalen Hurts got this offseason, and it was nice that he made some time for me. There was an Octopus on, it was a Sunday night game in like week 8 or 9, and the Chiefs were playing the Titans, and they were down by 8 with like 3 minutes left in the game, and Patrick Mahomes had an Octopus on like a great scramble, and then there were like flags on the 2-point conversions, and they ran it like 3 times, and he ran it in. And I tweeted something to the effect of like, okay, now it's time to find out if Patrick Mahomes is too famous to talk to me about the Octopus this summer. And I said it as a joke, but also like very seriously, because I did not add him. I am not the most famous person in the football media realm. So, you know, if you're someone like Patrick Mahomes and you've got interview requests from like Peter King and Albert Breer and Rich Eisen and Mitch Goldich, you're probably not like, oh yeah, call Mitch back first. So I was joking about like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to get Patrick Mahomes. And then I got Jalen Hurts, his counterpart in the Super Bowl. So it was fun to talk to him for a little bit. And we've got a nice little an annual series. All of my series were back this week. One that I do actually every year and one we do every 4 years.
Take that, Patrick Mahomes. Jalen Hurts, no. Infinitely more likable, infinitely more accessible.
Burn that bridge. I would be happy to give Patrick Mahomes the award next season. The only stipulation is he scores an Octopus and then he talks to me on the phone briefly.
There we go. So walk me through your bad take from its inception. And here's what I think is important. It's a bad take because it's universally believed to be a bad take, but it's something that deep down in our soul we believe. And, mm-hmm. You know, mine during the original Bad Takes Week back in 2019 was that we should still be hammering Eli Manning for not playing for the San Diego Chargers. And I believe that in the very depths of my soul, but most sane human beings without a grudge or an agenda say, move on. This is, you know, his Hall of Fame ceremony is soon. Just like it happened and there's nothing.
It's a very anti-labor take of you. And things have only skewed further pro player in the time since then. And I think you have also been pro player. Like, I think you've advocated a lot for players to, you know, empower themselves and improve their, I mean, you've talked about like rookie quarterbacks demanding trades in the case of one particular quarterback who has a very agitated fan base that has been in your direction for a while. But you know,
did I tell you, by the way, I hate to interject. So what Mitch is talking about is when the new Bears regime took over, It looked like they were not really building around Justin Fields. They were sort of, they got, I think that at the time they gave away their best offensive lineman. It looked like they were trimming the fat a little bit offensively. And Allen Robinson had left and they didn't re-sign him, which ended up looking really good. But at that moment, I'm thinking, okay, they don't like him. Here's how this goes. They're going to bottom out. Then no one's going to want Justin Fields, yada, yada, yada. That turned out not to be true. The Bears turned out to be not good, but kind of awesome in term offensively and building something around Justin Fields. They doubled down on that by giving away the number one pick at a time when you could reasonably surmise that there might be one or two future franchise quarterbacks in that draft class out of the four or five that everyone was talking about. And so I wrote an apology letter to the Bears front office during my sort of virtual summer training camp tour, whatever you want to call it. I will say that it did in one way, shape, or form come up. And I actually had to account for that take, which I was just trying to do my best to defend Justin Fields. But for everyone out there who thinks that these are consequence-free posts that I just make, not true. It would be like if someone in your office just fires off the most ridiculous emails all the time, and then he has to see these people at the water cooler. And all I'm saying is I paid the price there, and I had to account for my bad Justin Fields take.
Well, the thing I would just say about that, because you caught a lot of heat for that, that might be the piece you got the most heat for all of last season, counting like a calendar year of football. But I think a lot of people who are mad at you like saw the headline and didn't really understand what you were doing, because I think a lot of people thought it was an anti-Justin Fields piece. Like, it was absolutely not you saying, like, oh, Justin Fields sucks and the Bears should get rid of him. It was like, they don't respect what they have. This isn't a good situation for him. He should go somewhere that'll build around him. Like, I think a lot of Bears fans got mad, either, like, mad that you were putting the idea into the world, or mad, like, misunderstanding, thinking that you were criticizing Fields, which I don't think you were doing in that piece at all.
No. And my other one, I think, that got the second most heat was the year before when I said, hey, Saints fans, I think this time Sean Payton is leaving. And everyone said, go to H-E double hockey sticks, Connor Dork. And guess what? He's going to start this season as the head coach of the Denver Broncos after a year with CBS. Fox? Peacock?
Where was Sean Payton? I think it was Fox.
Fox?
I'm not 100% sure, but I think it was Fox.
Crackle?
It might have been NBC.
Crackle?
No, I don't think it was NBC. Drew Brees was on NBC, and people didn't like him. He had that Bengals playoff game with the whistle. I think that was Drew Brees. Do we even know what I'm talking about? You might have been at that game, so you probably didn't watch it on TV.
Was that the Titans
game? I think Sean
game?
Payton went to Fox.
Sean Payton went to Fox, not Crackle.
I think so. But anyway, putting aside who worked for what network and whatever last year, we can steer this back to the bad takes. I think the most helpful starting point here might be for me to just read all of them.
Yes.
I will read each story.
Chapter one.
Word for word. No, I will read all of the headlines, and then that'll give listeners an idea. And hopefully they've read them all. I hope people go to our website and subscribe and read all these pieces. You can search for my intro, which then links to every story in them. And if you find one of them, they all have a link at the top where you can find them all. But anyway, then if you want to talk about like our favorites or the most realistic or most unrealistic or whatever, that is sort of a good way to get into this. But one thing that I like about it is that it's a very, it's a wide range. Like, we gave everyone free reign to just decide whatever they wanted. So like, some people made sort of in-game rule changes. Some people made larger changes to the schedule or the calendar, like you did, Connor. Some people went small. We've got one that is just like a pedantic argument about what terminology we use. So I like that these are sort of all over the place, and people were not limited, and we got a nice creative variety of takes here. So do you have anything else you want to add before I just read through these?
Yeah, no, I'm ready for the synopses.
All right, I will read these in the order they were published in, because that's the order that I have them in. Connor Orr, our opener. The NFL should add preseason games after the draft, like NBA Summer League. Matt Verderame writes, the NFL should reward safeties with an immediate red zone possession. Gilberto Manzano writes, NFL head coaches shouldn't be allowed to call plays during games.
I like that one.
Michael Rosenberg says the NFL should abolish the play clock in favor of a better system, which we can explain. I wrote these headlines, by the way, mostly workshopped them a little bit, but some of them are sort of, you know, teasing you in. So just a better system. What on earth could be a better system? Oh, that's, I want to click on that one. Greg Bishop with the pedantic take, he says, of course Super Bowl winners should call themselves world champions. Mm. Claire Kiwana writes, the NFL should make game-winning field goals in the final 40 seconds illegal. Albert Breer says the NFL should buy the XFL and USFL to make them developmental leagues. And one thing they got left out of the headline there is that he's also moving the XFL to Europe. And then closing things up with mine, using a chip in the ball to measure first downs won't solve the NFL's problems. Because I was too much of a coward to say using a chip will make everyone miserable, which is what really is the thrust of the story I wrote.
Let's start with yours. I agree with you 100%. And I don't necessarily think this is a bad take. I'll make it into a bad take. My bad take, on to piggyback on your take, is that human error is a beautiful thing. It's an important thing. It's an essential thing. And I have always believed that with Major League Baseball. I think robotic strike zones are so ridiculous because any time that you machine adapt something, you're going to have someone maximize it to their advantage. And so with a chip in the ball, there's going to be some team that figures out a way to manipulate where the ball lands, you know, to work around the computer to get extra yardage or to kind of whatever it is, fool the chip into thinking that they're further along. And your take, I believe, included some confusion about things like forward progress and other stuff like that, right?
Yeah. And so, and I will say, I am not in the camp of people who are like pro human element. I'm against like the fully automated MLB strike zone for some other reasons, and we don't have to go down a tangent on that. But
personal and religious.
No, I'm not like, oh, we got to have human element. Like, mistakes are a fun part of the game. Like, I'd love to get rid of mistakes and be accurate. But yeah, I just don't think everyone's like, oh, this is going to work so much better. You're just going to know where the ball is. But like, there are so many issues with forward progress. You think about like, I mean, the play I always think of is Freddie Mitchell, 4th and 26 in the Eagles playoff game against the Packers, where he like catches the ball in the middle of the field, like in the air, and he gets hit and he comes down. And like, that might have been a bad spot and whatever. But like, where the ball is not always where the guy is. And then it's also a matter of not just forward progress, but like when a knee is down. And so you picture like a running play up the middle. And I guess you've got this machine, the computer. I sound like I'm like 80 years old describing a desktop computer. You've got these machines with the screens and the pictures, but no, you can see where the ball is thanks to the chip. But that doesn't help you see like when a knee is down, when it's like blocked by the camera, or it doesn't tell you. You know, it's not even always a knee. Sometimes it's like a shin or a forearm is down. And so I just think it's a lot more than just like where is the ball. And then the other issue that I have is not with just accuracy, but with precision, which is just that once they're able to pinpoint with like deadly accuracy where the ball is, there's going to be pressure to do that on every single play. And so right now, it's like, I think they do a good enough job. They do their best. You can challenge one or two times a game for like the most egregious mistakes that they make. But for the most part, it's like, imagine if after every single play, they're like, okay, it's 3rd and 5, put the ball at the 42-yard, 2-foot, 8.73-inch line, and like make sure it's lined up in the exact right spot because we know how many inches they need to get to the first down. And it's just like, that's going to take forever if they are obsessed with like being as accurate as possible. And so I just think there are issues. And I think everyone, they hear about the technology, and there was like a tweet that went viral during the playoffs last year where they announced that a player was like 0.6 yards away from the goal line. And everyone was like, we need this now. And everyone views this as like this perfect thing that's going to come and solve all of our problems. And my take is just like, it's not going to be as great as you think. Like, you're going to find new things to complain about. Mm-hmm. New issues are going to come up. You're still going to be miserable. There's still going to be mistakes. And it might just make everything take a lot longer. And so Could it be better? Could it be useful? Like, yeah, I think it could be useful to have a chip in the ball. Like the Music City Miracle, I'm sure it would have been useful to know, like, well, was this a forward lateral or not? Like, there will be plays like that where that's helpful. But I think people view it as this, like, miracle cure-all that's going to fix all our problems and get rid of the chain gang. And I just think, like, the chain gang works fine. And this will potentially bring in more unintended issues and problems that people aren't even thinking about.
Except when it broke twice last year during the playoffs.
Yeah, it's bad when the chain breaks. Maybe get a stronger chain. There might be other solutions to fix certain problems that aren't as high tech.
My favorite sort of story related to this was during the Eagles-Giants game, I think it was, during the playoffs, there was the moment where I think the referee spotted the ball, and was it a Giants player or an Eagles player that just, like, during the television timeout, just picked it up and moved it an entire yard backwards? And
I love that. Good offensive linemen do that, like, every game. I think Kelsey does that a lot. I think he's one of those guys. There are others, too. I think a good veteran center knows how to do that, like, line up in the right spot where you can just move the ball and people don't even realize that you moved it. I love that.
Like, before every down, you could, like, you know, like, I'm just digging the ball in. And in the effort of doing that, you could advance the ball, like, a quarter of a yard without anybody noticing.
With the chip. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And the chip will ruin that. And I do think that there is these fun little parts of the game that sort of knocks out, right? And otherwise, you don't get to celebrate that brilliance, right? I don't know.
I'm with you. Obviously, I wrote the piece.
Creative cheating is what it's all about. Let me bounce my because what I like about my bad take is that I'll give everyone a peek behind the curtain here. You called me and you were like, hey, you need to come up with something for Bad Takes Week. And you were, you know, we bounced around a couple ideas, several of them I can't mention on the podcast. And then I said, well, Mitch, why don't we just double the length of the NFL preseason? And you said, you don't believe that. We can't write that. And then I was like, I love the preseason. You know, Dane Sonsenbacher, like all these guys, like just ridiculous names that you're never going to hear from again. No respect to Dane Sonsenbacher, who I looked up the other day, and I think he's a broadcaster in Ohio, by the way.
Good for him.
I remember John Gruden used to love to say Sonsenbacher. You know?
I think now that everyone's behind the curtain, you and I were like brainstorming bad takes, and I think I might have been frustrated. I don't know. And I think I might have sarcastically thrown that out as like the worst possible take that's so bad no one could write it. And I was like, oh, double the preseason. And then you were like, oh, I love that. But then I think you did save it, because at first it was like, come on, we're not going to double the preseason. And then you saved it by moving it to May. And I'm not fully convinced, but I'm interested. I'm interested in the idea. And I think the way you did it, turning it into an NFL summer league, basically, and putting teams in pods of like neutral site games, like sending 8 teams to Minnesota and 8 to Atlanta and 8 to Vegas, and like having these little like round robin tournaments and letting fans, like at NBA Summer League in Vegas, you can just like buy a ticket to a session and like watch a couple of games. Like, that's a cool day in Vegas to like buy tickets to 3 or 4 football games, and then, you know, like, or even like 2 sessions of 2 games each, and then come in and watch your team and watch some other game and watch some scrimmages in May, like soon after. I think that's part of the issue, is that it's right after the draft. So I don't know that you'd really see the schematically interesting things that you're claiming could happen there, but it's a fun idea. It's a bad take for sure, but I like it. It's a good bad take.
Here's what I was thinking about this too. It would get all the rookie deals done sooner, which would be nice too, because everybody holds out until right before training camp and they're just arguing about offset language, right? That's really the only thing that you can argue about when it comes to a rookie contract, since they're all boilerplate. Will you be able to double dip your salary if you get cut before the end of your rookie contract and you go somewhere else? That's it. And so, I don't know, you get these guys into camp, you get them motoring early, and I just think, you know, the hard thing is the NFL Players Association did the right thing by limiting practice time, and I don't think it was a mental health thing at the time, but just supporting these guys in yanking them out of the facility at some point during the day and not making them feel like they were forced to be there 24/7. You know, putting a limit on meetings, putting a limit on the amount of time that these coaches can have with them. The side effect that I think has been obvious, and while we're sort of fat and happy with scoring going up, and everything like that. I do think that the game has suffered a little bit. I mean, think about what's really truly blown your mind schematically in football over the last couple of years. I mean, I would say probably Sean McVay in 2018, 2019 was doing things where we were like, whoa, baby. And then everyone sort of just stole it and kind of took it for their own. Maybe the 49ers like last year a little bit, especially when they started getting all these guys. But I feel like there's just as much player driven. I think we're missing a lot of the spectacular stuff. And we have better athletes than we've ever had before playing the best positions, the positions that touch the ball at all times. If you were able to get them around their teammates more often, I think we get something that's pretty special. I don't know.
It would be fun. I don't think you'd get enough good players. So, like, you had a note in your column about, like, somebody from some random school, like, knocking Derrick Henry on his ass. And it's like, Derrick Henry's not going to play in this game. And, like, this was written even before the running back started having Zooms to talk about a crisis at the position. Like, there's no chance any running back is going to do this, except maybe a rookie, but certainly not a first rounder like Bijan Robinson is. You know, like, I don't think any running back is going to waste the limited number of carries they can take in their life against NFL defenses in a game like this.
That's your choice. But then the Patriots, I bet, you know, you play all your starters all May, and then by September, you're just rolling, you know? And everyone's like, how'd the Patriots get so good? Because they practice harder than everybody else, you know? And
all right,
with the Patriots, you get to wear the numbers that Belichick makes them earn. So, like, you're going to have, like, a rookie quarterback wearing, like, 61 in the summer league. God, that would be cool. Just saying.
And the NFL's sitting there thinking, oh yeah, we're going to have everyone wear like special summer league jerseys and sell them the names with the fake numbers. And they'll like make them look casual. I don't know if they'll do like the Andy Reid Hawaiian shirts style, like make it lead into the summer vibes. That actually could be kind of fun, but you know, they would come up with something.
Brought to you by 1800 Tequila. You know, the sure. NFL Summer League. Let's briefly, I don't know what you want to do here. Do we want to like power rank the remainder of them, or do we want to just talk about a few of them here?
Power rank is hard. I don't know. You're steering the ship here, but I don't know if you want to, I don't know. How do you want to do it, Connor?
Okay.
It's your show.
You tell me your favorite of the remaining takes, and I'll tell you mine, and I'll tell you why. And I can even go first if you want me to.
Sure. So favorite, like as a bad take,
favorite
or favorite
as
like
take.
An actual idea of what could happen?
Either or. I'll accept either okay. or as long
All right,
as you clear
I'll let you go first. I have a feeling you and I are going to have the same one, but I'm going to let you go first.
I loved Rosenberg's
I knew you
take.
Were going to say
yes,
that.
That you should like. So I encourage everyone to read it. Mike Rosenberg, our esteemed senior columnist, was basically – there shouldn't be a play clock. You should have 2 minutes for four downs and then do with it what you will. And I love that because there are so many different ways that you can manipulate that. And the thing that Mike didn't get into in his column, which I think would really benefit the NFL, is it gets us back to more no huddle. It gets us back to speed-oriented stuff. And so early in the downs, you're going to go fast. You're going to go faster, or you're going to be able to have someone like Sean McVay do what he did with Jared Goff, which is take more time to analyze the defense and eventually be able to come up with more successful plays on a down-by-down basis, which if you're the NFL is great, you know, less crap.
Although he did have a note in there about they would still shut off the coach-to-player headset after 20 seconds so that you would not – get like a full 2 minutes of Sean McVay talking to you at the line of scrimmage.
I think
but
you should get it right up until it's like an F1 helmet. You're right up until
the
end.
It is just a bonkers take. When he pitched it, I was fascinated by it. And I love that this is published on our website. And it was a very interesting thing. What I loved about it was like even putting aside the take and whether this would happen, which obviously it never would, I thought it was just a good a thought-provoking thesis that like the clock just is annoying and so much of football is just like worrying about the clock. And then that's not actually what anyone likes about football. And he wrote about a lot of different scenarios of like, well, you can't throw here, you gotta throw it to the sticks, or you can't whatever, like worried about like stupid penalties for like illegal substitution and like players running off the field, and it's like all because people are hurrying because of the clock. And so I like that he just sort of streamlined the game and just left in like the good parts of the game.
I like Claire. Claire, by the way, everyone should follow her on Twitter. She's a great editor, great add to the MMQB team. I like hers that you can't have a game-winning field goal, but there needs to be a sort of sub take to the take, right? Which is that we have to have some sort of option for what could happen. Like, let's say you get inside, you get into what would be classically referred to as field goal range. And then, you know, let's say that there's fewer than 5 seconds left. You just get the ball at like the 15. You know what I mean? Like, you need a chance to score there. Like, it's almost like, it's like a warp zone in Mario where it just gets you ahead a little bit.
I disagree. I like her take as it is. Her whole point is play for touchdowns. So she wrote, she teed it up with talking about the Super Bowl and how like the Super Bowl was amazing for 58 minutes. And then the last 2 minutes were boring because the Chiefs just kneeled it out and kicked a field goal. And so she was like, in that situation,
if you were writing on deadline, Claire.
So she was saying in that situation, you know, you have to go for a touchdown to win the game, or you could kick a field goal early, but then risk leaving the other team time. Mm. So it kills all situations where teams are just like running out the clock to kick a field goal at the end. I like it. It would never happen. I do like the drama of a game winning field goal. I think if I was going to make any changes to hers, the issue is like, I get the idea of trying to get rid of the cheapies, like people kicking like a gimme, like 30-yard field goal at the buzzer is not that exciting. Although Blair Walsh maybe is listening to this and thinking, oh yeah, this is a great idea. Absolutely. but you know, there is drama in like, you know, when guys are now kicking like 60-yard field goals as the clock expires, like that is fun and exciting because you don't know if it's going to go in. So I don't know, but it seems like, I mean, I was going to say it seems silly to put in like a yardage restrictor, but then you take a step back and you say, well, like the whole thing is silly. But I don't know. That's the part. I don't know that I would love losing out on the drama of like Justin Tucker lining up from 58, like in the final 3 seconds. But I like the idea of trying to make the end game more exciting.
Hilberto Manzano's take that head coaches can't call plays, shouldn't be able to call plays, is also good. But I'm going to tweak his take as well, in that they should not be allowed in any way, shape, or form to wear a headset. They have to be like Joe, like end of career Joe Paterno, just completely removed from any and all digital communication from the sidelines. And so you just like, you're just going to have a head coach screaming at everybody, or it's going to force him to learn all the hand signals. He'll be like a backup quarterback in college doing the grease hand jive, you know, and trying to get his quarterback going. I don't know.
Or imagining like him, like Chip Kelly poster boards, and he's got like a stack of like 50 of them.
Yeah.
And he's like at like the record store, just like flipping through one at a time, looking for the one that he needs. You and I spend too much time talking to each other, because as soon as you said no headset, my mind immediately went to Joe Paterno sitting up in the booth, and I was like ready to cut it and say that, and then you beat me to it.
Boom.
I mean, none of these would happen, but his is just hilarious. It's also, it just feels like it's very hard to enforce. You would need like guys on the sidelines being like, hey, like you're not allowed to call plays. Like don't, unless they were not attached to a headset, like in your idea. But I will say, Matt Verderame, his is by far the most realistic. And I think we might have let him get away with one here, because when he pitched it, I thought it was a bad idea. And then I read his piece and I think it's actually a really good take. As you know, Connor, and as many of our listeners know, when there is a safety, the team gets 2 points, and then the other team does a free kick, and so you get the ball in good field position. Verderame supposes that instead of the 2 points and the free kick, you just get the ball at your opponent's 20. It's basically the rule that, you know, the some people want this to replace the fumble out the back of the end zone rule, which is a touchback, and they want, instead of that, they say, like, well, push it back to the 20-yard line or whatever. But anyway, I think I love this. And one thing that I did not know, and he unearthed this stat when he was writing the piece, is that last year there were only 13 safeties in the whole season. And on those 13 safeties, only two teams scored points in the possession after their free kick, which is kind of wild to me. I think a couple of those safeties were like literally the final play of the game. So there wasn't a drive, or there were like 5 seconds left. So it might be only like 10 or 11 actual drives. But like, that is such a low success rate to get any points at all. And so I think I love this idea that if you stop the defense or stop the offense, your defense like stuffs them at the goal line, tackles them for a safety, forces a turnover, whatever. You just get the ball in the red zone right there. And you have a chance to get a lot more than 2 points because you're starting in field goal range and you've got a great chance to punch it in for a touchdown. I think I actually love this take. I don't think it's a bad take.
How about you get the ball at your opponent's two, but your defense that just scored the safety has to play offense?
That's certainly a bad take. No, honestly, though, his take here, good or bad take?
I think it is too good to be a bad take.
Yeah. I think I sort of came to that conclusion, but it was too late to bump it to a different week. It's a good take.
We talk about reevaluating our processes every year, Mitch, and as the proprietor of Bad Takes Week, you know, you let one slip by. That's okay.
You know, I might have. I didn't realize how good it was. It was just, it was a well-written, it was a persuasive piece.
Henrik Lundqvist does it. Mitch does it. It happens to everybody.
I think you've called me a proprietor like 3 or 4 separate times this podcast. It's very nice. What is propriet a verb? Do I propriet things? Can I say that about myself? I think it's probably not the right word.
Sure. You're the innkeeper of Bad Takes Week. How about that?
All right. That is good. I have to get out of here in about 2 minutes. I assume you might just like use my voice and like an AI thing to just have me continue this conversation with you. But before I bounce, do you have any other last takes you want to talk about or anything else to get off your chest?
I think that you and I together will produce a lot of bad takes this season. And that's what I'm looking forward to the most.
I look forward to us coming up with bad takes together and then me sending it out into the world with only your name on it. That is how the system works with me as your editor, and I think we should continue doing that.
All right, there he goes, Mitch Goldich, the best editor, podcaster, octopus man, extraordinaire. The MMQB NFL podcast is produced by Shelby Royston. Mark Mravick is emeritus editor of the MMQB. Super Bowl champion Andy Benoit and Rec League basketball three-point assassin Gary Grambling are the founders of the MMQB NFL podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this feed on Apple Podcasts. And once you do, leave a rating and review because it really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get a premium finish with less odor and fumes for your painting project with Rust-Oleum's Low Odor Spray Paint. It provides a long-lasting, durable finish, making it perfect for indoor or outdoor projects. Save big on Rust-Oleum Spray Paints, now at Menards. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big.